This is David Wolford, and I'm here in Madisonville with Michael Lowry. Today is the 15th of August, 2002. We're going to talk a little bit about Madisonville schools and the desegregation process that went on here. Mr. Lowry, would you just start by introducing yourself? Tell me when you were born and where you grew up.
Yes, I was born in Madisonville in 1950. I grew up here in Madisonville. I've had the distinct pleasure, though, of traveling to every state and some 45 foreign countries.
Really? Where did you attend school in Madisonville?
Which school? Are you talking about
elementary? Great. Well, let's start with elementary school.
Elementary school, Grant Street, which was the black elementary school at the time.
Okay, could you tell me a little bit about Grant Street?
Well, Grant Street was a school that was... The principal of Grant Street was the same principal of Rosenwald, Mrs. Pearl Arnett, at the time that I attended. Grant Street was located on Grant Street, and the back of Grant Street, if you went out the back, you would go right into the back of Rosenwald. Of course, there was a big field in between. So there was one school, there was just one principal over both schools, and we sort of used their gym if we needed to. And there was only one, there was a bad thing about that. There was a ditch behind Grant Street, and it stayed open, and all the sewage went through it, and most all of us probably have some diseases from that, because when it would rain, it would flood, and all kind of stuff would come out. And Mason's funeral home was there, and all the embalming they did went right in that ditch, and it was open, and everybody went to school, it was just there.
Whoa. What were the teachers like at Branch Street? Can you recall some of them?
Yeah, I know all of them. Very strict. Very strict teachers, very good teachers. Most of the teachers went to Atkinson College, which was a black Methodist college here. And then from there, most of them went on to Kentucky State. We had a few on faculty that went to Tuskegee. And did some graduate work at Shaw University. So they were well prepared and very good teachers.
Sounds like probably every teacher was certified to be a teacher?
Yes. Okay. There might have been one or two that were had eighth grade education and then started teaching, and later on they were certified. But most of them went on to graduate from high school and then on to college.
Mm-hmm. You spoke of the immediate surroundings of the school building. Can you maybe tell me a little bit more about the building itself, the inside, what it looked like, and some details there?
Well, they built, I guess it was in the early, middle 50s, they built a new part to Rosenwald. And tell that it just was like an old school building, one of the old, you can see, it's still there today, it's a church now. It had... two rooms you could open up, and that would be like our little auditorium. It did have a music room. It had first, second, third grade, fourth grade, and all these were just like in rows around. Everybody knew where they were. And then it had, when they built a new part, then you had a music room, and then you had an art room. There was a little office which served as a teacher's lounge. It was a teacher's lounge, office, and library. Very small, but that's what it was, in the sort of the center of the school.
The building still stands today, I've seen it now. It's a church. When were you there, roughly? When were you attending Branch Street?
57, 8, 9, and up through about 57 to 8.
How would you rank that building or the quality of that structure at the time?
Well, I think it was pretty good. It had steam heat, they use, steam, and it was cold. But you must remember, now I had traveled, but for most of us, we didn't know anything else, so there was nothing to compare it to, so it was a good school. I went to school 41 in Indianapolis, so I knew a little different, but I mean, it was a good school. The only thing was, it was the only school, so people had to come from miles around. We had to walk to school. I had to walk at least 16, 17 blocks, and no matter if it was snow, rain, or what, we had to walk.
Was that the only black school that served that area at the time?
It was the only black school.
What about out in the county?
Out in the county, they bused people in, except there was one in Nortonville.
A black school in Nortonville?
Elementary school. They bused people from Nebo, and they bused people from... Now, Earlington was independent. They didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
But they bused some people from Nortonville. I think Nortonville must have just had K through maybe... Well, they didn't have K through nothing, because they didn't have kindergarten. They were independent. It's like maybe first through six, something like that.
All right, where did you go after Branch Street Elementary? Where did you attend school after that?
After that, because Rosenwald was like a school, we went to Rosenwald too, because I was in band, so we went to Rosenwald for band. We went to Rosenwald for lunch, that's where the cafeteria was. We went to Rosenwald for all the plays, we practiced there. We went there for any assemblies. After that, Branch Street went through the seventh grade. I was in a gifted program. I left there and went to seminary.
The what seminary?
Seminary was the integrated school from seminary, and it was seventh and eighth grade on. And so I went in the eighth grade.
And it's on Seminary Street? Is that why it's called that?
It's the board office now.
Okay. Before we get into, let's talk about your experience there. So this was your first school you attended with white people?
No, I've been one in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Well,
for a short period.
How long were you there?
I was there about 5 months.
Okay. Well, in Hopkins County then, this was the first school you attended integrated. And I'm guessing it had been integrated a little bit before you got there. Is that correct?
Waddle Avenue had been integrated, and also this school, which was Masterville High School. Seminary, I think, we all went over there the same year, if I remember correctly. There was about 8 or 10 of us that went over there.
So that was the first crew of blacks to attend seminary school. Okay, well, can you tell me a little bit about, the preparation for that? Did you go through anything
No.
In particular? Just ready to move on to a new school?
Ready to move on to a new school. And remember, most of the blacks here, my grandmother did domestic work, so she knew some of the teachers. Some of them knew me. Some of them knew most of our parents because they worked for them. They did day work, so they knew them. It was a little bit of a... we had problems. We had them called niggers, and they... Sometimes somebody would push you, and of course there were fights, you fought back. It didn't get to be a real, it wasn't that bad. One of the teachers, of course, remember the time she would call us, she said Martin Luther, and she'd say, and I don't mean Martin Luther King either, and she'd say, make little remarks that couldn't have been interpreted as racial. I don't think she meant it, because I knew her very well. But some of the kids did. Things and but by and large it wasn't a bad year.
So the fighting that went on was just kind of, would you just describe it as a fight between students that was inconsequential?
Well, no, it was between blacks and whites, and it would come about because of a name calling, usually pushing, something like that nature. And I got into a lot of, because I was very vocal.
Mm-hmm.
I was always the leader of any little group, so I was sort of the spokesperson. So
Did you ever get in any trouble for fighting?
No, because they knew what they were doing. Higgins was the gym teacher, and what they would do, recess was in the front of seminary. That's where you would go out. They called it that. So what they would do, the teachers would not come out. They all knew what was going to happen. And it was the older boys, they're older white boys, and what they would do, everybody would just gather around. Be like, I guess maybe 700-800 students possibly out there, and so they would block off so people couldn't see, and the fights would just take place. And we were outnumbered, and You know, they knew, the teachers knew the fights were going on, but they left them.
Why do you think they did that?
Well, Higgins was, in my opinion, a very racist man.
He was the principal?
No, he was the PE teacher.
PE teacher, okay.
He later became principal at Hanson later on. He knew, because at several times he'd say, well, you know, Perry Crawford, like I was in the 8th grade, Perry should have been like in 11th grade, he's still, and they had a special ed unit. And what would happen, he would say, well, now, doing PE, we'll put the gloves on you. He knew Perry could whip any of us. So what he did, we wouldn't put the gloves on, so what he'd do is just let the fights go on out there. Those kind of stage things, he knew, and most of the other teachers did too.
Did anybody get severely hurt, do you think, or?
No.
Okay.
I was threatened, and I did carry a knife to school.
Did anybody ever see the knife? Did you show the knife?
I showed it to all the black kids. It was a butcher knife. I rolled it up in one of the rolls of paper towels. I put it inside that and put it inside my pants leg.
Did you ever have to use the knife?
No.
You spoke about Higgins at the school. What about other teachers at seminary?
Most of the other teachers were receptive. And I don't recall having any racial kinds of problems outside Higgins, and maybe a couple of remarks, but most of them were not. Most of them were pretty good.
Did the teachers or the administration at seminary school, did they take any particular steps to make this transition smoother?
I think that by Waddle Avenue and Madisonville North Hopkins and Madisonville High School being integrated earlier, I think they were more prepared for us coming to seminary. I don't think that it wasn't new. It wasn't, you know, like kind of problems did come, because I remember at the time I was there, Rosenwald was still going on and Branch Street.
So Rosenwald operated until when?
About 65, 66, somewhere like that.
Did you have the option to go to Rosenwald instead of seminary?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you end up at seminary?
Because my dad was in service. He came home and he said that's where he wanted me to go, so that's where I went.
Did it have a reputation of being a better school?
Well, I don't think it was a better school, but they had more things to offer. The black kids, we had used books, whatever the board gave us, that, you know, the white schools didn't use. That was a well-known fact. They offered more, and so my dad, being in service, he traveled and he saw more things, and he figured that for me to have a better education, I should go to that school.
And then after seminary, where did you go to school?
Came here.
Here being?
Madisonville North Hopkins. I'm Madisonville High School.
And it was in this building here that's now Browning Springs Middle School?
Yes.
Okay. How integrated was Madisonville High School at the time?
It was pretty integrated by that time. A lot of kids had left Rosenwald. And an odd thing, sometimes we'd go back, because it was a community school, we'd go back to Rosenwald, and some of the teachers would say, well, what did you come back over here for? You left us, and things like that. And sometimes they didn't want you back. But it was odd, because we all went to the same churches and lodges, and so we pretty much everybody knew each other. But that's, I remember having that comment made to me.
Well, when a student, that's interesting, when a student, a black student, would choose to go and attend a white school once that became the option, you've kind of described it, but explain that a little bit more for me. What was the view by the black community or those black students or teachers that remained over at Branch Street or Rosenwald?
Most of them were resentful. They did not like it because it meant that if integration was to become full and close Rosenwald, they knew that they could lose jobs. They also felt you were betraying schools that had been there and that had educated your parents and them, and so there was a lot of resentment there.
So I guess whether it's true or not, your opinion, if you chose to attend the white school, others would feel your opinion is that Rosenwald isn't good enough for me anymore. Whether that's true or not, that's the perception, it sounds like. Okay. Well, could you talk a little bit about your high school years here, race relations in the building?
About when Rosenwald closed and everybody came over here about that time, and I would wager that there was a lot of fighting, and we could go off campus for lunch, and there were stores around, and there was a white youth center across the street. Blacks were not allowed to go in there.
Even as late as the late
60s? They were not, but we went in anyway. I did, and carried some others, and that caused some trouble, but we were determined to go in there. I led a little march across there, and we went in anyway.
Was the youth center a public facility, or was that privately owned?
It was public. It was Madisonville Community Center, and kids who would eat here, they would go there to lunch. You could buy some food over there, and also in the afternoon, they had games, and et cetera, et cetera. Stuff like that, games you could play, table tennis, whatever.
Did that place become an integrated place eventually?
I was the first person to get a membership card there. I had a membership card. So, yeah, I did go. Yeah, about three or four of us did. At the same time, Rosenwald, the black community had built the center after they'd been building on. So most of the blacks went there, opted to go there than come over here. But a lot of blacks had problems with white students calling them names, but yet there were a lot of friends. A lot of these kids lived in neighborhoods, and so they were pretty friendly with each other. One incident I remember, Dean Dowdy was the music director, and some of us got in the band here, but most of us didn't, because he didn't like the kind of music we played. We played Peter Gunn, and we played a lot of different songs that he just didn't think were worthwhile. He did music appreciation. Sometimes we'd bring records that we thought, and he didn't care much for that. He was not very receptive to that. However, there were blacks that did get in the band later on. Most of us chose not to.
You said that there were a handful of whites, at least, that were your friends or, you know, blacks. There was
I'd say more than that.
Mm-hmm.
There was more than that. There was a great many, because it, like in the South, it was a little different here. They, like in any southern place, they knew a lot of people because our parents babysitted those kids, and we kind of grew up in the same community and saw them in town, and some of them even played ball in the community with them. So, and at that time, when they came here, blacks were integrated onto the ball team, so it was a little, wasn't bad.
Did you recall any whites ever sticking up for any blacks here at the high school?
A couple of times. But blacks just felt very resentful. And during the time that King was killed, During the time that King was killed, yes, we marched from across town. There was a rally. I had three girls, one of my sisters, and we went into Tucker's, which was integrated, which was a segregated place right there in the black community, the restaurant. So we went in there, and from that we all kind of mushroomed, and people came, and we marched from over there to the school. And the next day we didn't go to school. We just came over here and stood out. There used to be like that's still out there,
landing a little.
Yeah, and people would go. So we went out there. We wouldn't go to school that day.
How did others in the school respond to your staying off school that day?
I think most of them understood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they agreed with it, not they understood. I don't recall anybody getting in real trouble about it.
Did you play sports or involved in extracurriculars at the high school as a student?
No.
Not at all?
No. I played a little ball, but not very successful.
Mm-hmm. Any other extracurriculars?
I was in the history club, and I was in the beta club.
Did you have any problem entering those clubs?
No.
Do you think that what was that like? Was it any different than the school day in terms of race relations? I mean,
no. Got along pretty good. Got along pretty good.
Okay.
See, and by this time there were black teachers here too.
When you were a student, there were actually black teachers here?
Rosenwald had closed.
What happened to the teachers at Rosenwald when Rosenwald closed?
They were integrated into, assimilated, I call it, into the system.
Did all of them keep jobs, or do you know?
All but one, I think.
Okay. How do you think white students responded to that, being taught by black teachers?
Pretty well, I think. The librarian here, Mrs. Crawley, had been the, she was probably the most educated person after the black principal, Mrs. Arnett, who had been for 30-some years past. Mrs. Crawley was a highly educated lady, and she became a librarian. She had been an English teacher at Rosemont. And then the English teacher, Mrs. There was three English teachers from over there came over. Carlos Whitworth was a math teacher. All of them got jobs over here. And then the ones that were in the elementary school got jobs in the elementary school. And I don't recall them having a lot of incidents.
When you were a fairly young student, the very first school that was integrated here in Madisonville in the Hopkins County system was Waddell Elementary, fall of 1957. And then a year later, Pride Elementary integrated. Can you recall these events and what that was like here?
James Van Leer and I were close friends with the family, and so I knew, and I knew the principal at Waddell Avenue. She was very mean, very mean to James. She's teaching, I mean, she's a friend of mine now. I knew Dixie Lewis Logan forever, but she was a very mean lady. Miss Edwards at Pride was a very mean, cruel old woman. And when blacks would go down there, because in the afternoon we'd all, even down, you know, in the afternoon we'd all rush back to see. There would be people standing, you know, to see Willie Mae Elliott would take the kids in the car, and Harley Lee Hayden and J.W. Mays, they would take them in their cars, and they would rock their cars and everything. We'd go over and watch at Pride. Pride had a very difficult time. They did not want blacks at Pride, period.
From what I've gathered, James Van Leer integrating Waddell Avenue in 57, the very first integration, which had some opposition, but it seemed to be a lot less than Pride Elementary the following year.
Why
do you think that was like that?
Because more blacks went to Pride than just one. And also, Pride was a relatively new school compared to Waddell Avenue. And a lot of the whites who went there did not live in town. And I think they were more rural. Well, they lived in town, but they lived Madisonville, just inside the city limits now. Those whites were more, they just lived in little clannish groups and probably just didn't want to integrate. They were opposed to it.
So the resistance in this town even existed differently in different neighborhoods.
There was a resistance at Waddell Avenue, but Pride was just worse. Probably because of the way we clientele. I think you had more cultured whites that I think went to Waddell than you did went to Pride.
What do you mean by cultured?
In the sense that these people grew up in better homes. A lot of them had traveled. A lot of them had just a better sense of the world. They had they had more money. They had economic status was better. All that. And when you look at that, that's different than some of the whites who went to Pride.
Can you describe the scene a little bit more? What kind of authorities were called in, and how big of a crowd was there?
I remember there being hundreds of people on several occasions. State police were there, and I remember Willie Mae going, and I remember them throwing rocks, and most of us stood up on a hill looking at down to Pride. We could see what was going on. It was very hard. It was very cruel. The way of calling nigger and calling all kind of names and pushing and shoving and all that kind of thing until the police kept out of the state, the authorities kept them back. And I remember being friends to the Elliots, and they had a lot of threats, and I would go down and sometimes, and I know they stayed up late at night. So I kind of was involved in it because I was friends with the family, and we'd go over and stay, so I knew that. So at the same time, they were receiving, because Willie Mae was the one that was taking them, you know, to school. And that, you know, they threatened to kill her and through fire on the burnt crosses and all kind of things.
When you, why did you stand atop and watch this going on at Pride Elementary? You really didn't have a direct stake in this, did you?
We lived there. I lived just about 6 blocks from the school.
So if you hadn't attended Branch Street, you think you would have attended Pride?
Probably.
Did you have the option to go to Pride Elementary?
Yes.
But you chose, you or your parents, one, chose Branch Street, the black school, elementary school. Why do you think that happened?
Well, probably because of the resistance of the whites at that time. And it was, and then it was nationwide. I mean, people were getting killed, getting hurt. Kids were being damaged mentally as well as physically. And so I think my parents wanted me to be involved in that.
Understand. Were the local authorities, meaning the county or city police, were they helpful with maintaining these crowds?
Not a whole lot. The chief of police, Pat Collins, here, he was very racist. I hear him use where blacks live, nigger town, colored town. So I'd go interviewing about events that would happen. The very night we marched over here, he came from, we were at that restaurant, marched over here. A girl was pregnant and was hit by a local police too. And the next day, James Van Leer and I went to interview Pat Collins, and he said, "Well, I got a call to come over to Nigger Town. I mean, Colored Town." I never forget. He was a very racist man, and they didn't do a lot to protect, blacks. So that's why the state troopers were called, the state government. I think that's why most blacks now, and anyway, have always depended upon federal intervention rather than local, because local, if local had been receptive to it, you wouldn't have had to call these other people in. In most cases, they were not. And that was the case here.
Did federal police come at all?
Or I know that there were troops, federal troops came.
Here to Madisonville?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And since you graduated from Madisonville High School, what year?
69.
Class of 69. And since then, you're now a teacher in the system, and you've been involved with the NAACP. Could you maybe explain how you got interested and involved with that?
Well, I marched with Martin Luther King in Selma and Birmingham. My grandmother and I we would go to all the marches. We marched in Frankfort and Washington. We knew them through working through the church. And also when I went to Murray, there was no black anybody at Murray, black in any position, not even a janitor or cook. So I started a black student union there, and we finally ended up suing the university. It went all the way to went to the Supreme Court. It was a test case. And four of us were put out of school, in fact, and we had Dick Gregory down to support us, and we had A.D. King, and we had Angela Davis came. We had a lot of people that came to support us, because at that time, Kent State it was in the works, and we were doing a lot of things. We actually stopped the parade and went into the homecoming to make our demands known. The president had said we could, and then said we couldn't. After we got there, and they called in campus police, and we were arrested, and it was a difficult time.
What was the lawsuit over exactly?
Well, the lawsuit was over the fact of the way they treated us, the way they actually handled us on the campus. Then they suspended us. They took us downtown, the court down in the city. Police, they said they couldn't find anything we'd done wrong. But then the campus, it was a very racist administration. They then suspended us and took us before the school tribunal, and then we went on from there. And then they divided us up. One guy was on probation. But it was all the black students. But I was the president, the vice president, and the spokesperson. James Van Leer was one, and we were all in.
Did he attend Murray also?
He was there a year before I got there.
What was the outcome of the lawsuit and the decision?
But finally, it was a time Nixon was in president. He just appointed me, and it was the outcome was we went they stayed the universities. They upheld the university. We went to Cincinnati to, I think, this federal court in Cincinnati. I forget the district now.
Sixth Circuit. Of the Court of Appeals?
We went to Paducah first.
Uh-huh.
And then we ended up going into Cincinnati.
Do you remember the lawyer that worked with you, or was, I mean...
He was from Paducah. There was a man who was from Paducah who was a newsman named Powell. And he had a lot to do with helping us get a lawyer. And the lawyer was named, forget his name now, I have it in scrapbook at home, but he was a young guy out of Lexington. And we had several other lawyers. William Kunstler came down just to support him. There was a lot of things going on at that time. And I came back here, and of course, all of the local things that were said, so I couldn't get a job here. I didn't get a job here for years and years. And so, and it was because they knew my reputation. I had been involved with King, and they knew I'd been involved in all the marches. And they didn't, I'm sure they didn't want me in the school system.
Who's they?
The school board and the administration.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I got in as a substitute, and then I was hired as adolescent day treatment, and I got in. And since then, I became sort of a paradox. I became I got Teacher of the Year in 1996, and I was brought into this building 18 years ago, and got off real good. There was a lot of lawyers and doctors kids, and they were more, they, you know, I had all of them in class. I had the gifted and talented, and it's real good, you know, been really good run. Been some racist things that have happened, but I'm always cautious of it, and I think they were cautious of me because they knew that I would certainly go to court and do whatever I had to do.
About what year did you start working as a teacher in Madisonville?
20 years ago, I don't know what, 80s.
Early 80s. So after college and before you actually became a teacher, there was some time there, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I worked for legal services as a paralegal. I've always worked at Elliott Mortuary. Then I went to Texas. I taught in Texas. I taught at Triton Junior College in Chicago. I taught at Northwestern School in Indianapolis, St. Mary's in Paducah, Breckenridge Job Corps.
All before you came to Madisonville, and you've remained here once you became a full-time teacher?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to the NAACP in Madisonville.
When I was in Breckenridge, the chapter here had gone down. Willa Mae Elliott and her had been very active, and some of those, they had really just, you know, a lot of them had died out. So I came back and revitalized the NAACP. We got the charter back, and we became a force again. I had up to, the state gave us a plaque for having the most members. 1 year, we were up to 500 members. I named it Madisonville Hopkins County branch of NAACP. We were on every committee, got involved nationally. We helped host the convention in Louisville. Locally, we handled case after case. It just almost killed me that all the phone calls were from my home. We never had an office. Any case, anybody brought a case, we took it. If they brought a complaint, I did a lot of research. Working as a paralegal with legal services, I had access to a lot of things I could do. I was a community education specialist. Then I also was the liaison person between the black community and legal services and clients' counsel, which was set up. So that way, I was in a position to do a lot to help a lot of people.
What kind of complaints or what kind of action was taken by the NAACP?
Oh, when people were, job discriminations, people were not promoted, we'd go in and look at that. We had one in particular, we had a black man who's now, he's still working for the police, for the first black policeman. There was a group committee that was, well, we had helped get on. I belonged to what we called the Black Citizens Committee years before I went to college. And so a spinoff from that, when I came back, a lot of people just looked to me for the leadership. So we went into that kind of, you know, thing. What did you ask me just before that? Because I wanted to go back.
What kind of complaints and actions were taken?
The boy that's at the post office. Now, what happened, he was at TVA, and he came in, and they said he had falsified his application. He had not, but the question was...
This is a black applicant to what?
He had been in service to become a mail carrier.
Okay.
So Johnny Clark was the NAACP General Counsel out of Louisville. I got him, called the boy back from Iuka, Mississippi. He went back home, called him back. We went to, had the negotiations, and the arbitrator came in, and we got him that job back. There were other jobs. We got people, you know, back on their jobs. We also had people read their grievance policies. When they didn't know they had a policy, we advised them to get their policy, bring it to them. We set up, advised veterans. We had a veteran. We had every committee that NAACP had nationally and state. We had one here to look into all the veterans' complaints in education. I would go to the schools. It's one reason I'm sure they'd give me a job when there were complaints about black kids being forced into special ed classes or labeled special ed. We even looked at those cases at Pride, and Mr. Bearden was there, and at North, when there was complaints, there was always complaints at North. There was always racial things from the time I was there. I almost got a girl called me. She was going with my cousin, called me. She called me a name, then she pushed me, and I hit her. And that was a big thing at that time. And so I knew how North was made up. I knew about it. And so I'd go out, and when there were cases about on riding buses, try to make blacks sit in the back of the bus, and fights on the buses, and homecoming queens and cheerleaders.
This is in probably the mid-70s we're talking about here?
70s and 80s.
70s and 80s?
On the ball team, some child would get kicked off the ball team. We investigated any complaint, which is what the NAACP does, if it's a civil rights complaint.
You said the membership peaked at this time. Why do you think that happened?
Well, because of things that were going on in the country. I mean, the 60s, 70s, 80s were time when blacks were gaining some foothold on some things, and so they needed organizations like NAACP. People had an urge to join to make things better. So we joined, and I knew a lot of people from traveling, and I brought speakers in like Benjamin Hooks, who was a national director. His wife, Frances, the state president, came in. I held office in the state. The visibility and program. We had Dr. Kelly Miller Smith, who had marched with King from Nashville, came. First black woman surgeon in Nashville, Dr. Dorothy Brown, came up and spoke. And I had something going on all the time. Yeah, I mean, I drove from Breckenridge. I was teaching at Breckenridge. And I would come home and hold meetings. I had mass rallies. We celebrated all the black jubilee days. We did everything. We had newspaper articles. I attended all the national conventions, brought back, you know, people to come speak. And we would have whenever there was a law passed, we would go to city council meetings. We would go to, we were just active in everything.
Do you think that, was there any, how did the white community respond to the NAACP's
those whites
action?
Who were, I think, educated, and I'm not sure, but I think most of them were sympathetic or understanding, and sometimes both. Then there were those who are always out there who don't know much about, just know they see it as niggers trying to take over, niggers trying to get in. That's where they see it then, see it that way now.
Was there ever any pressure from whites to NAACP members to fade out?
Yeah, I got threats and called and all kind of things.
Like what?
Well, called, you know, we're going to kill you, nigger. I had some, my car was, the windows broke out of my car. And, tire slashed. And there's some pretty editorials were pretty bad. I got some letters in the mail, you know, you ought to burn. And, it was kind of complaints. They burned cross in Murray. See, at Murray, I was president of the NAACP at Murray also when I was in college. I started
Was that a campus chapter or was that a city chapter?
A campus chapter.
Okay.
And I was president of the Black Student Union too, so they burned my car there, and then I was burned a cross and then set the room on fire. So you can never tell whether it was a real planned group or if it was just a group of whites who said, you know, we're going to scare this, whatever.
Well, you spoke of editorials. Was that here in Madison?
In Madisonville. It was pretty. Some of the editorials would say, you know, you shouldn't be pushing for this. We've given you this. We've given you that. You haven't given us anything. And I remember the swimming pool that was built out here in the city park. Before, when they integrated, James Van Leer and I went out and they put snakes in there and they put glass in there to keep blacks out of it. The law said they had to integrate it. Then when they built the new pool, we had worked for that because we went to Frankfurt and had a commissioner come down, and so they did build the pool. And of course, they gave a job to somebody else, you know, lifeguard, whatever. But we the ones that really got that. We got some news articles about that. I've got book articles go back forever. We got all that kind of stuff. But we were the first ones to really push for that. And we have them come in, and they said, yeah, there will be, that pool will open. So they were going to close it. The city closed it. So, yes.
Well, I guess I should just kind of close with the question of, you know, and kind of been described, but we're now here in 2002. How do you describe race relations in Madisonville and in Hawkins County now?
Race relations may be, I think, because of the conservatism that's in the country, race relations are breaking down. Because the things like affirmative action, things that would help blacks get a better foothold in society, make the playing field level, at least come to some parity, they're fighting against it. And I think that's causing race relations to that have been really strong. People are, let's say, they're really at odds with it. Also, school vouchers is a big thing. Even though we have some teachers here in Madisonville, well, I've really gotten into it big because I went to NEA as a delegate. I've been in it forever. I'm local vice president. They support vouchers, and the reason they support vouchers is because they want some of the private schools where they know blacks won't go. And so it's not about choice necessarily. It's about getting away from those blacks at that school. And so I see that as being a bad thing, as well as the fact it takes public funding out of public schools. And if you're going to fix it, you ought to fix all schools so that every child receives the best education they can receive.
The white power structure that existed in Madisonville in the 50s, and the comments in the paper that I read from the 50s and 60s, does that still exist here?
Subliminal kind of things. If you can read well and read the editorials, yes, it's still.
How about in amongst the town, you know, the police department, business district. I mean, is that still dominated by whites? Or?
Yes. And you also have right now a black man who's over the maintenance department, the sanitation department, who's been accused, and they've tried him three times. He's been accused of having some kind of sexual relationship with some inmates who work for the city. And it's been to court three times. They've thrown it out. And he hired a number of blacks. I bet you 80% of the blacks on the sanitation department are black. And that's the real case there. We're working on that now. I've gotten to talk to him about an attorney. I have sent him to an attorney, a friend of mine in Louisville, Aubrey Williams, who's going to be looking at that case. But, I mean, the judge threw it out three times, but the county attorney just keeps pushing it. And it's not about the sexual thing, really. It's because he's just hired all these blacks.
I've sitting talking with you, I can tell you've been through a lot of things. You start out in a segregated school, and you've through college, and as an adult here in Madisonville, you've against a lot of opposition, you've still fought for a lot of black advancement. What do you think has caused you to do this?
The way my grandmother raised me, and the fact that I traveled at an early age. By the time I was 7, I had been practically every state in the union. Traveling broadened my horizon. I could see what blacks were working in Buffalo, New York. My grandmother had a large family. We would visit. I'd go to Detroit. We'd go to Indianapolis. My dad, we married, lived on Cape Cod. I saw things, and so I wanted to make sure that other people had the opportunities. I could see blacks advancing in other areas. I had the chance to meet Malcolm X and to march and to do things. And of course, when you have been in that, you don't lose that.
Well, Mr. Lowry, I thank you. It was very nice.
Thank you.
Thanks.